Hello, this is Jerry Pippin. Welcome to our special on the Psychic Detectives. Can murder victims come back from the dead, from the other side, and tell who killed them? Exactly how do psychics work with the police in finding missing bodies and solving murder crimes? Today, we have an incredibly interesting show as we talk to three psychics in different parts of the country about how they work to help police and the families of victims of violent crimes. We'll be going down to Houston, Texas, and talking with Vicki Warren. We'll go to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and visit with Jen Sutterfield. But our first guest is from Ohio, and we made this tape back in February, and it was quite cold in Ohio. Now it's almost summer. We were talking on the phone in February to noted psychic Gail St. John about her amazing track record in solving murder crimes. So let's pick up our show. Gail St. John, it's cold in Toledo.
Very cold right now, about 15 degrees.
The reason I ask you that, I've seen you on television, and you have a big reputation working with police departments around the country as a psychic detective. And I've always wondered, and this may be an off-the-wall question, but does the weather affect psychic ability?
It doesn't affect the ability. Oh, of course, unless I'm standing outside. Yeah. Can't think because my feet are froze.
So I imagine from that standpoint it would. If you're standing in a cemetery or a crime scene and you're freezing, you might have trouble bringing something in.
Well, my mind still functions. The body just doesn't. It does hamper an investigation if I'm actually out there in the field, because I'm one of those hands-on people. I will actually get out there, and if I'm shown a place to go, I will physically go there and find the body if there's a missing person.
And you've done that before?
Many times.
And usually, how does that work? Do you have a hunch, or do you have a visualization, or is it a combination of things?
Well, it's a combination of things, and biggest thing is no two cases are ever alike, so you can't ever say, well, it's always this certain way. Some cases it's a vision. I feel like I'm watching a giant television.
Oh, really? So it's in panorama vision or cinemascope. It's a wide vision.
Or sometimes you actually are right there. I mean, your whole room disappears and you're at the scene.
So it's more like a 3D movie.
Right. You never quite know how it's going to happen. It really depends on the strength.
Do you just see the vision or do you feel things? In other words, in a picture, you're watching a movie, you hear the sound, and you watch the scene, but do you feel the wind blowing? And the...
Everything. You get smell. You pick up smells.
Uh-huh.
I've been somewhere where I stood there and didn't recognize, of course, where I was, because it might have been in another country. It might have been, you know, here in the States, but I didn't recognize the area. And I stood there sniffing. I smell pine trees. I smell tar. I smell, you know... And you can pick up smells from the area.
Hmm. I want to get into more detail about this in a minute, Gail, but you come from a family of psychics. That had to be it was average for you because that was your environment, I guess, but it would be unusual for most people. Couldn't get away with anything as a kid, could you?
No, it was pretty hard. You really can't because, you know, pretty much everybody knows what everybody's doing. And, It's pretty much, from even knowing what the other person's thinking, it's more than just knowing a person
mm-hmm.
when you live in a family like that. So.
Well, I imagine you're kind of inside their head.
Yeah, and there's no really any point to trying to lie and get away with it.
Well, that's no fun. Is your husband psychic?
No, he's not.
Oh, well, good. Okay. Then you can sneak off and have a dessert at lunch or whatever.
Yeah, but he knows me pretty well after 20-some years of marriage.
Why, sure. Sure, I understand that. When did you first get into using your ability for the good, for law enforcement?
Let's see. I was probably roughly about 15 years old
mm-hmm.
When I started. I think I was around 7 when I made the the conscious decision to say that I am going to, when I grow up, you know what most kids say, they want to grow up be a fireman, they want to grow up be a, you know, policeman. I said I want to grow up and I want to find missing people and work on murders.
And you knew that from early on. That's kind of like I knew about broadcasting.
Right.
I used to get everybody in the whole neighborhood to have to take part in my radio and TV shows. And as a consequence, not many people came to visit me. No, I'm just teasing, but I know what you're saying. You know, a lot of people don't understand what they want to do, and I think it's kind of, you knew, and I knew, it's kind of refreshing, really, you have a goal and you work for it.
Right. It's just, I started doing things and realizing really more about my ability, I want to say probably 3-4 years old. Because I can remember an incident very well that kind of started me off. I want to say that was the jump start.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing with friends in my front yard and turned around and I looked at my friend's house and it was on fire.
Wow.
I turned around again and look, I kind of shook my head and looked again and it wasn't. I was so confused. I mean, I'm about a 4-year-old kid. I'm thinking, oh boy, whoa, wild imagination here. Well, several days later, their house caught fire. Of course, they were safe, thank God. But, you know, I realized at that point, I saw that. I knew that. I knew that was going to happen. I could have not prevented it, maybe, but warned them. And I, you know, then I realized, and still today, that is one of my very strong points in disability. Everybody has their strong points. And my strong point is stepping into the future.
So you actually can tell what's happening. Or not always, probably, but do you wait till the flash comes? In other words, or can you call upon your ability to foresee the future?
I can call upon my ability now that I've gotten older and mastered it. And I use it on my cases to look into.
And how do you do that? How do you do that? How does that?
Killer's going to kill again. Can I prevent another murder? Can I prevent something from happening? Is there some way, or where will the killer end up? Can I find out where the killer may end up, or anything in that way that can help?
Can you tell if the case is going to be won or lost in court?
Quite frequently I can tell those things. I can even say when a case is brought to me, I can tell you if it's ever going to be solved or not solved.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll tell you if there's going to be...
Have you ever been wrong about, this case will never get solved, and then something happens?
Not that I know of yet.
Okay. I'm just curious. Tell me a little bit how the psychic detectives thing got started.
Well, it was pretty much a dream of mine. From at least about 5 years now. I wanted to put a team together that worked well together, that could drop the normal, I want to say, human issues of ego, because we don't have room for that. And
in television, it's hard to find somebody without an ego.
Right, and it's hard anymore to find. Ego is great in some places, but not in this type of work. In this type of work, we have to work well together. We have to have no egos, and it was difficult. I interviewed different people. It just didn't work. I mean, they'd start right out with the kind of the know-it-all type of attitude, and, you know, I was like, no, this isn't going to work. We've all got to work together to, you know.
How about the other two people?
I'm with Jim Sutterfield and Vicki Warren, and right now we have been together for several months, and...
And it's working out okay?
It's great. I mean, we have found... I think we've all shocked ourselves. We've emailed back and forth to each other and said we've shocked ourselves. We work so well together that the rate that we're handling cases is 3-4 times faster than when each of us was working alone.
Jim Sutterfield's down in near Hot Springs or someplace in Arkansas. Where's Vicki?
Vicki's in the Houston, Texas area.
And you're the only one in the upper Midwest.
Yep, I'm here freezing. Yeah.
Well, the reason I bring that up is 600-700 miles difference between you and both of them.
Right.
Does distance make any difference at all? I know in our business now, with the way computers are, my executive producer's in Secaucus, New Jersey, right outside New York, I live in most of the time, and well, my residence is in Oklahoma, but I do a lot of taping in Las Vegas as well. And one of my tape editors is in Boulder, Colorado. Another person's in Carson City, Nevada. So it really doesn't make much difference, I don't guess, where they are.
No, we go back and forth via email, telephone. We reside sort of, I want to say we reside on...
Well, you guys are psychic. You don't need a phone.
Well, occasionally we do. We reside on Yahoo groups. So, you know, that's our place where we store our cases. We communicate back and forth with each other. Each one of us hands in what we call a sheet on when a case comes in. None of us reads the information. We like to do them cold, so to speak.
So literally, probably most of these fairly current cases, but it's called so the cold case analogy doesn't really work other than you don't do a lot of homework on it.
We don't do any, if possible. We don't want to know anything but a name.
And
if we know a name, then each one of us goes to work, hands in our sheet into our Yahoo group, and then everyone reads each other's going, oh, let's see if we what we agree on here. What did we talk about?
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, and then we're all like, oh, I can't believe it. We all wrote almost exactly the same stuff. So, I mean, we were kind of like kids learning about each other going, oh, look at this. Oh, look what you saw, you know. So as we've developed as a group, it's just been sort of like really, in a sense, three kids getting together and learning.
Yeah, now Gail, I want to get into some examples of your cases. I mean, we'd be remiss without discussing some of that if you can. I mean, are you working on something that's pretty particular, you know, particularly difficult right now, or?
We have quite a few cases right now. A couple of the cases, I want to say, are, you know, a little more higher profile.
Sure.
Matter of fact, there's a missing girl since about January 31st of 1996. Her name is, she's on the missing and exploited children's list, Rachel Marie Mellon. We are working on that case.
And did she just went off to school and never came home, or what?
Well,
Or do you know? The reason I ask you, you said you didn't want to know much more than the name when you first started.
After we handed in our information, then we're allowed to look.
Uh-huh.
We get to look afterwards.
Okay.
But basically, with her case, as her website states, she had stayed home from school, pretty much disappeared while staying home from school. And has not been seen since 1996.
And she's still missing today?
Still missing today.
And none of you have any hard and fast information?
We have some information that we haven't, that we're...
Yeah, I understand this is a ticklish thing.
We do have some information, and we feel good about that case. Another case we're working on is which was also on... missing and exploited children's list is Sean Hornbeck case. He's been missing since 2002, still missing.
What generally happens to these missing children? They usually are just murdered and dropped off someplace, or is that too bleak of a?
Well, parents are involved in some cases. You know what I mean, and they. You know, take their children, just parental abductions, but...
In other words, the divorces, et cetera.
Right, and in a lot of cases, unfortunately, the children are murdered.
What do you think that, you know, the percentage, I've always figured that if they're missing for a year or two, it's probably 60-70% chance they're dead.
Right, it is, and it's unfortunate, and then your issue becomes, now, where are the remains? If we first thing we determine is, when we go to work a case, is, are they dead? Are they alive? Now, apparently, if I contact them directly, they're dead.
Okay.
Come to me directly, they can't do that if they're alive.
But so you delve for lack of a better term on the other side.
Right.
Can you talk to anybody that's passed away?
Pretty much.
How does that work?
Just basically like you and I are talking. Which seems
you hear a voice.
I will hear them.
In your.
I will and most frequently see them in front of me.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
And I would think this ability. Would A, be questioned by authorities, but B, be a great use to them, because every victim knows how, usually knows why they died.
Right. And
I would think, from your standpoint, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that ought to be painful, talking to somebody about how they met their demise.
It is. Some of them are not able to talk to me as much as show me, which is sometimes, I think, even worse. But sometimes they have a hard time dealing with what happened. And I'm shown things and feeling the last moments of someone's life. Physically, you feel it, and emotionally, you feel it.
Do you feel, I mean, a lot of these things are violent deaths. Do you feel pain?
Yes. Yes, frequently. And you have to, you know, when you get to that point, you have to shut it down. You know, I've learned to say, okay, enough. I get what happened.
How do you call these spirits, for lack of a better term, up? Do you sit at a desk and concentrate, or?
You know, sometimes I will sit and actually concentrate, what I call a meditation session, where I'll sit and just blank my mind, free myself of everything, and just relax. And then sometimes I'm driving down the street and they'll talk to me whether I like it or not. I've had to pull off the road.
In other words, once they figure Gail St. John's on the case, they're going to take it.
Yeah, there's... I was called on a case, as a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania, and I was getting ready to go out to dinner. I did agree to take the case. I said to email the information. I had names. I said, just email the information. I'm on my way out the door. Well, I get on the road, and next thing you know, the road is gone. It's hard to drive when you can't see the road. It just kind of disappeared.
Wow.
And this whole scene started folding, and I just kind of whipped the car over and put it in park and went, oh, hey, guys, wow. You know, that, you know,
yeah.
It's a little wild there. Can we not do that when I'm driving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, they don't know a sense of time. You know what I mean? Like we have. I mean, hey, it sounded like a good time, I guess, to them, so they did it.
Where are these dead people, do you think? Are they in another dimension, or?
Do we want to call it heaven, or whatever people want to call it? The way I have viewed things and seen things, and of course, I'm naturally, you know, human. I ask questions. From the questions that I've asked on the other side, the way it's referred to me as, it's like planes. You know, like different, almost, the feeling is almost like a school, like planes. You're on different levels.
You're different, in other words, some are in the 6th grade, some in the 12th grade.
Right. And you keep working over there, just sort of like you keep working here to learn more.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And what are your, I know you've been involved with, for lack of a better term, spiritualism.
Right. Yeah. I pretty much grew up that way.
What is your philosophy about life and death?
Well, you know,
I mean, I don't want to get real deep here, but
yes, but I say there is much living as we are. They just don't have a physical body. They're as much alive as we are. Apparently, they are, because I can talk to them.
Well, I've always thought about this, and if I were murdered and I went to the other side and there was life, by God, I'd go get the guy.
That's right. And that's how a lot of these feel that contact us. A lot of them feel like they are doing their best. They want this person put away.
Sure.
Just for what they did, but to prevent others from...
Sure, sure. And that's an important part of your job and your psyche, why you got involved in this. And for the most part, most policemen, I think, have that in mind.
Right.
Or they wouldn't be policemen.
Right.
But you know, I have had violent deaths in my family, murders.
Mm-hmm.
If I were the person murdered, I'd make sure that SOB was haunted every day. If I had any kind of power.
And some, I'm going to assume, are.
Yeah, okay.
Because I have some, I've had people come through there very strong from the other side. I'm going to say, so probably in life here, when their physical body, they probably were very strong spiritual people that already had, say, sort of, so to speak, that open, that you know, spiritual awareness. They weren't shocked when they passed on, you know, that there was an other side.
Yeah, right. And they were taught certain things, and they accepted certain things in their belief system, and they die, it may or may not be true.
Right. And so I want to say, so probably people that maybe don't have as strong a belief system, it may be a little more shocking when they get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, they're a little behind than some of the others who were already, you know, had that mindset. And I've had problems with people contacting me. In one case I worked just recently with the Jesse Jones case.
Tell me about that.
Oh, I joke about him because he was my one-word clue, the king of one-word clues, which was difficult. He when he passed, he was sort of a proclaimed atheist,
mm-hmm.
which I think ended up being a bit of a shock to him, of course, you know, once he was gone. And when I first made contact with him, he was sort of in a corner. And I tried and tried, and he just wouldn't respond. I had several meditations with the family. Eventually, I got him to talk, but he became my king of one-word clues. When I'd work the case, he'd give me one, maybe two words to go on. Now, I like games, but that's really hard.
Yeah. Why would he do that, you think?
It's all he could get out to me.
I mean, it was beyond him. He wasn't necessarily playing a game. That's all I could just do.
Right. He couldn't figure out how to contact me exactly, or how to get out a sentence, or how to get, you know what I mean? So it was a word or two. And I think the biggest thing he gave me was, one time he said, pressed and sealed. But to the average person, just like myself, that I just stood there going, thanks, Jesse.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Right.
I just don't get it. What's wrong with me? I don't get it. Show me more. Well, he didn't have the ability to show me more. Pressed and sealed. So there I hung. The only thing I was impressed with, because a lot of times he couldn't talk, he impressed me with and said that his body would not be found till mid-April. I said, okay. I told the family. Well, I didn't know. You know, stepped into the future there, I didn't realize it would be me finding the body. I don't always know those things. I don't know if it would be me or somebody else, you know.
Mm-hmm, I understand. Especially this guy with one-word clues.
Right. So, I did. I found him, I think it was April 17th or 18th. I found his body. But I was in a store shopping. This is one of those good ones. You're in the store shopping, and I had found, there's a lot of things I'd found previous from his clues, but I went and dug up evidence from a motel key to a kicked-in motel room door, but none of it was adding up to me. None of it was helping me find where he was. The pressed and sealed lingered in my mind, and I went to the store the one day, and I was a little angry. I have. I have a tendency to do that. I was a little angry.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, you know, come on, at least one more clues aren't working. I was in the parking lot, and I just kind of yelled, Jesse, talk to me. And, of course, my daughter's always going, Mom, Mom, you said that out loud. Don't do that.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oops, sorry. You people look at you like you're a little nuts. You know, but she's like, I was feeling very, very deep frustration from this case. And all of a sudden, he just yelled right back at me. A street name. And I knew it was a street name because he impressed me with that feeling after he said the name. Okay, king of one-word clues. All right. So I got on the computer, and it said there was no such street. Oh, I was like, oh, Jesse, I'm not getting this. There's no such street. So I get on the phone with my oldest daughter, who's a nurse, and she says, well, Mom, I have one of these big, you know, maps, and it tells everything. Let me look it up. So I'm on the phone with her. She goes, oh, Mom, I found it. I'm like, okay, I'm in the car. I'm with my 17-year-old daughter. I'm in the car. Direct me. I'm driving right now. Get me there. He wants me there. Get me there. She's giving me all these instructions. I find this little street about four houses long. In between the four houses is a vacant lot. When you look through this vacant lot, it leads you to the next road over, which was a state highway. I'm looking over there, and I'm still going, all right, Jesse, I don't get it. I'm looking, but I'm looking through this vacant lot like it makes a picture. You know what I mean? It sends you to the other side of the you know, where the next road is.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just confused. And then all of a sudden I looked to my left and I looked at the building and it said, seamless siding and gutters and airtight windows. And then I heard Jesse say the words again, pressed and sealed. I went, pressed and sealed. The process is pressed and sealed. Oh, I said, Jesse, why didn't you just show me windows or something? He was telling me the process.
Mm-hmm.
Sealed, airtight windows. And seamless gutters and siding, when they come out, they do it on the spot. They're pressed and sealed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about this, but apparently it made sense to him. So I jumped in my car and drove as fast as I could to the other street, walked down the line. There's a creek line there, and there his body was in 5 minutes I was there.
You see, the body had to be decomposed at that time, or not?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you see some horrible things.
Yeah, you do.
And
I won't say you don't.
Yeah, and I wonder how he felt seeing his body decomposed. I guess when you go to the other side, you'd kind of leave that, huh?
Yeah, it's not really a reaction. Like I said, the funny thing is, my daughter went down the creek. It was a very steep embankment, and I stayed up. And as I was walking, like the first couple of minutes, my daughter always says I'm like a hound dog on a trail because if I cross the street, I probably get hit by cars because I don't even look. That's how bad I am. I'm on a trail. I can't get off of it. Well, she was down there, and all of a sudden I heard my father's voice. My father's passed away, and it was very strong. He said, call her up now. And I was kind of puzzled. And so I went ahead, and I called my daughter up immediately up the embankment. She got up, she says, what's wrong, Mom? I says, I don't know. And I just took about four more steps, and I felt a hand on my shoulder. And I thought, looked, and my daughter was next to me. So, and then I looked, and it was Jesse. And he just said, turn, and looked down, and he said, that's me. I turned, looked down, and that was him.
Wow.
So it was like, if I hadn't called my daughter up the embankment, she would have fallen over.
So I'm getting the impression that those that have passed on to the other side hang around and are somewhat like guardian angels.
Right, right.
You mentioned your father.
Yeah, my father. I talk to him frequently. He helps out. And the funny thing is, Jesse seems to now be hanging around, so to speak, with me. And
So he's your bud, too.
Yeah, he's been working on other cases with me.
Well, good. Gail, we could talk for hours about this, and we probably will in the future, but our time's up for this time. I know that. Did you go over to Tokyo or not?
We are put off in Tokyo until spring.
Uh-huh. The reason I ask you this is you're well-known around the world.
Yes, pretty much.
Okay. We have a link to the website, and we're going to give it for the radio listeners again. And we'll be talking to Jim Sutterfield and also to Vicki as we continue the show on Psychic Detectives. Gail, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we have a link here on this page to Gail St. John's website. I think you'll find it very interesting. In a moment, we're going to another woman who's very interesting as well, Vicki Warren. But first, we're going to take time out for this message. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Can psychics really solve crimes? Hi, this is Jerry Pippin. Many police departments actually use psychics on hard-to-solve crimes, and they've actually had pretty good success. In fact, there's a program on Court TV right now that's a raging success. So let's go back to the phones and talk to Vicki Warren. She assists the FBI and other agencies in locating missing and murdered persons, and she also helps them solve the crimes. Vicki Warren, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you so much.
You just got back from a cruise, huh?
I did. It was with Intuitive Vision. 8 days out on the Caribbean. Rough work, I know. We had to do seminars during the day and eat dinner and play at night. So it was an awesome trip.
Well, good. Good. You do that regularly, I think once a year or so.
Yes, I do once a year, and then, of course, I'm open to anyone that has a cruise available. I would be happy to go and present workshops and that sort of thing.
So they are available, and then we have a link to your website as far as dates. You could probably squeeze in another cruise if it came up.
I could manage that.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the psychic detective thing,
okay.
But we probably need to flesh out a little bit about Vicki Warren as well. You have clients all over the world. I know that for a fact.
Yes.
And you have conducted thousands of private sessions. What are we talking about?
Well, I have an office here in Houston, Texas, and I receive clients into my office, or I do phone readings, as I said, from all over the world. And basically, I will just ask for someone's name and age and take it from there. And then I just ask, okay, what's the priority this person needs to hear? And we take it from there.
Now, Vicki, somebody told me that you literally offer life-altering information to people sometime. That seems pretty awesome.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I work with a lot of patients with their psychologists, and we can discern sometimes, I've been told, more in 1 hour than years of therapy, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah, I would think that you would have to take that fairly seriously. I mean, you know, that's a weight.
I take my work very seriously. I balance out with fun. I like to go have fun. I like to play. But I do take my work very, very seriously. And with the United States psychic detectives, we do not charge for that. And so that is strictly pro bono, humanitarian, and...
Well, you brought that up. You've worked with several major metropolitan police departments. in conjunction with the rest of the psychic detectives and also by yourself, I think.
Yes, I just had a case. I just closed a case about just a few months ago. It was a national case. He was on America's Most Wanted, and the police from San Jose, California called me, and we spent about an hour on the phone, and I told him who to wiretap. I had described the fellow, he changed his hair, he changed his weight, he'd lost a lot of weight, he altered his fingertips through burning, and so they were unable to find him in any way, and I described several family members, and they did wiretap this man, and they were looking, the last time I talked to him, they were looking at 24 murders.
Wow.
It's an awesome and very humbling experience.
How does this work? I mean, do they give you something that belongs to one of the victims? Or, I mean, how do you get involved in these things? I mean,
well, basically, I ask for their name and their age.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been since childhood. If I have those two pieces of information, I can just tune in. There is apparently some kind of file that I'm able to open. And
now, when you say some kind of file, what you get back is it visual or is it words in your head, or how does that work?
Well, it comes in several different ways, so you have to be really aware when information starts to come in. Sometimes it looks like a ticker tape that goes across very, very fast.
Oh, kind of like the stock market.
Exactly. Sometimes it's like on a TV. Sometimes the vision start several feet out and then moves closer and closer to my feet or to my face. I do hear, I do intuit. I'm clairaudient, clairvoyant, and so I receive information in a lot of.
When you say you hear things, do you hear voices from the dead?
I do, yes. I am able to connect with the afterlife.
I was talking to Gail earlier in the show. If I were a murder victim and I had the ability to communicate back from the other side, I think I'd do everything in the world to haunt this person and make sure they get caught.
You know, the interesting thing, we just worked on a case where two children were murdered by their father. And I tried to look through their eyes to see what the situation was at the end, and I couldn't see anything. Well, after I found out that he had killed his children while they slept. So that's one thing. The second thing is when someone passes over,
mm-hmm.
It isn't always like they can give me the address of where they were, where they're buried. You know, I wish that were the case. However, it isn't.
You mean they give you clues or something?
We do get clues. I get names of cities.
What do you think's happening there? Is there life of some sort as we could identify with on the other side, or is it just kind of trapped information over there, or have you been able to draw a conclusion?
I believe that there is life after here. I believe that there is another side, a heaven, if you will. There is vibrational energy that has to line up. So if the person that's passed over doesn't have the same kind of vibrational energy, electromagnetic energy that I do, then it becomes more difficult to hear, and I have to tune in, much like we tune a radio.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's very easy to hear, sometimes it's very difficult, and you have to just keep fine-tuning as you're trying to communicate.
You know, I want to follow this up a little bit more, but one of the things that I found very interesting, and I have wondered if attorneys had ever done this before, but you've actually done jury selection, right?
Yes, when I lived in California. That's a very interesting process because if I'm working for a defense attorney, obviously they want the best juror for their position, you know. And
sure.
So.
So you've actually done things for the prosecution, too?
Yes, yes. Sometimes when we look at...
I just wonder how they turn that in on their expense account.
Well, that was free.
Oh, okay.
Pro bono.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because we do lots of trials and justice shows, and jury selection has become to the forefront in the last 20 years especially. It's always been important, but now it's almost down to a science. And I think it's interesting that maybe they're using psychics now.
Well, I think it's been for the last at least 25 years that I've been doing in that way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, now you know, you work on these teams, probably with psychologists and also according to the budget, of course, and all of that, and other practitioners that specialize in this. How do they take a psychic being involved? Are they pretty open to that?
The ones that are open contact us, actually. Oh. And so
you wouldn't know about the others?
No. I don't seek that out.
Uh-huh.
I just figure the universe is going to line that up however that's supposed to work.
Let's talk about why you're doing this work. I know you were a successful business person. What kind of business were you in?
I worked at a computer corporation, uh-huh. Financial analyst.
And you had some sort of life-threatening diagnosis. The doctors said you only had a few months to live, and obviously they were wrong.
That is correct. You know, I think it goes back, Jerry, to passion and life's purpose. I worked as a psychic reader for a number of years until I felt really burned out, and so I quit. At that point, I went to work as a financial analyst, just crunching numbers all day, every day. My soul cried. My life purpose was not being met. So, therefore, things in my life didn't work well.
Yeah, I think you have a book out right now, right?
Yes, Coffee, Donuts, and God.
And they can order that through your website. We have a link there. I believe in that book you talk about inner wisdom.
Yes.
Yeah. What is that exactly?
Inner wisdom is the inner knowing that you're doing the right thing, that you're following your path, that you're on the right path, that you're living your life purpose.
In other words, you got to feel good about it.
Exactly. Inner wisdom can also be the intuition that speaks to you every day. If you don't listen to it, if you ignore it, it's going to speak louder. And a lot of times when you ignore inner wisdom, a consequence could be ill health.
Interesting. So, in other words, it sets up some sort of battleground within your body, and physically you show the results of it.
Correct. I started doing readings again once I was diagnosed. I was on chemotherapy and 60 milligrams of steroids daily and 13 other meds. And once I heard that I had 6 months to live, I decided that just wasn't going to be the case. And so I started doing readings, and that was 15 years ago. My soul then became very happy.
And as a consequence, you sound like you're healthy now.
I am very healthy, yes. Total remission. I take no drugs, no medicines. I am back. Yeah.
Well, that's great. This coffee, donuts, and God, the dynamics of wellness, you obviously have a life experience, a qualification to write this. Tell me a little bit about what kind of things you're putting in these things. I know you also do lectures and seminars about this.
Yes, I talk about 10 steps, 10 power steps to wellness. The new book that I'm writing, Phantom Debt versus Karma, I talk about how we can actually change karma, our own personal karma. So the dynamics of wellness, the coffee, donuts, and God, I talk about using my life as a guidepost on how to better live your life purpose.
I mean, are we talking about just improving self-esteem, or is it deeper than that?
It goes much deeper. It's about how to listen to your inner wisdom. It's about how to just show up every day, be in the present. I talk about 10 power steps.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about different healing modalities that one can do.
So you believe basically that we have our own fate in our own hands?
I believe that we have a huge choice in the course of our life.
It's interesting when we talk about this. When did you first figure out you had the psychic gift?
I was about 2 years old.
Oh, very, very young.
Very, very young. Yeah, I've been psychic my whole life. And at 18, I moved from Colorado to California, where I worked for Sylvia Brown as a reader for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then set up my own practice, if you will. And my husband was transferred to Houston 20 years ago, so I've been working out of the Houston office now for 20 years.
You know, you mentioned your husband. I would think that if you're psychic, your romantic life would be easier.
Quite the opposite.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, I have a rule that I don't read for family. So I don't read for my children. I don't read for siblings. I don't read for my husband. I try to be as normal as I can. That adds some balance to my life. 1 year I guessed what a Christmas present was that my husband bought, and he took it back. So, great present, too. So I didn't, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, you learned the hard way.
Not only am I here as a psychic, but I'm also here as just a person. I have my own life lessons to learn, just like everyone else.
And your journey, you have to feel good about some of your successes. I we'll get back to the criminal elements here in a minute, but everyday life, talking to people, by and large, you feel you probably have been very good for most of your clients, right?
I believe that. You know, I don't advertise per se. My practice has been word of mouth, and I get new clients, and so that speaks of history, that speaks of how well that client and I resonate, that speaks of how well that client can resonate with truth.
Mm-hmm. You know, mentioned 18 in a little earlier, the age 18, so that led me to think of something at the time, and that's about high school. And girls in high school, did you tell fortunes or something? I mean, did you let people know you had a psychic ability?
You know, I did early on until I realized not everybody had the same gift. And so I began to learn to discern.
In other words, it was your little secret most of the time.
In high school, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. High school is a strange time anyway. It's very, everybody's very impressionable. They're almost adults, but they're still not. And a lot of things happen there that are mind-altering and life-altering, really, in my opinion.
Very.
I don't want to be like a psychiatrist here. Let's talk a little bit about the first case that you decided that you would help out law enforcement. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, I had a friend that worked as a secretary to the police chief in San Jose, California. And actually, her daughter babysat.
Is this the famous police chief that came from Kansas City?
I'm sorry?
Is this the same police chief that came from Kansas City? Don't remember his name.
No.
Okay.
No.
They had a very famous police chief that went to San Jose and changed the force a little bit.
Yeah, not the same.
Okay.
But, so she kind of sought me out, and the first couple of cases she brought to me, I was able to be, you know, very accurate and was pleased with my progress. One morning I was sitting drinking coffee by myself in my kitchen, and this woman who had passed over, who had been murdered, appeared to me and said, "Tell them Mark did it." And she began to show me how she was at a party the night before and where Mark had ripped a necklace off of her neck and began to show me how she was murdered. And then I began to feel very smothered, and she had indeed been smothered and choked. And so I called my contact at the police department, and I explained the situation. And she said, "I'll be right over." Well, they came over, and she said, "Look, this case just came up, the media doesn't even know about it yet. And so they sought out Mark through the course of several weeks, found that indeed that she had been to a party the night before, a necklace had been ripped. And so that was the first time a client, if you will, from the other
side. Yeah, now when you were received all this information, you said she didn't literally say I was smothered to death, but you felt smothered.
I felt smothered.
And did she talk to you at that point?
Yes, when she said Mark did it,
mm-hmm.
She explained the necklace. She showed the necklace. She showed how she had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And gave me the name.
When you take these cases, do you usually always communicate with the victim?
Not always.
Mm-hmm.
Like I talked about the Gehring children, they were asleep. It was very difficult to communicate with them. I had to rely on other things. Just I had to get a map out and intuit where they were at that point.
So you use all kinds of psychic clues, literally.
That is correct.
Do you go out to the crime scenes?
I haven't as of yet. About 3 months ago, Gail St. John approached me.
Yeah, she seems to go to them.
Yes, she does. Well, for some reason, they're all in that area.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, she does go out. And as with the Gehring case, I told her where I thought they were. Unbeknownst to me, she had already located that same area, as did Jim Sutterfield locate that same area. So we knew, with the three of us looking in that same area, that we were really, really close.
Yeah, next half hour we'll be talking to Jim Sutterfield. From what I understand, you three have developed into quite a team. You validate each other's feelings and...
Correct. We each come up with our own piece of the puzzle.
And if there's something wrong, you kind of put the puzzle together.
That's what makes it so spectacular,
mm-hmm.
to work together in that... I am very good with profiling and descriptions. Jim is very good with situations, how the situation happened. Gail is very good with locations, with numbers, road numbers. So between the three of us, we do make quite a powerful team.
Now, when you, and this has to be rewarding, by the way, but you mentioned earlier, a couple of minutes ago, they all seem to be in Gail's location, and that brought up something that I wanted to ask, and now you brought it up, I'd like to ask it, and that is, do you basically get your psychic vibrations and readings, or whatever you want to call it, from people in your area? You're down in South Texas.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think what happens there is because Gail lives in that area and she's well known in that area, that she gets a lot of calls from that area. I think once we expand, we'll be receiving calls from all over, basically.
Really? I mean, I would think that, and I don't know what the world is like on the other side. Do you?
I have my opinions. I think it's another dimension. I think it's a beautiful place. I think it's a place of healing. I'm not sure that I really believe in a hell. I think the hell is what we experience here when we're not the best that we can be.
Yeah, I of course I'm not nearly as qualified as you on that, but that's kind of what I think. I think that verse in the Bible about hell is here on earth is probably right. The reason I ask that is I'm a workaholic. I've been doing these shows for 45 years, and it's my passion. I can't imagine just sitting around feeling good. There must be something happening over there. What are these people doing on the other side?
On the other side?
Yeah.
I think... It depends. I think that we all have jobs. on the other side, I think.
Oh, really? Well, that's probably bad news for a lot of people to hate their jobs.
Well, maybe it can be a different job. Play golf all day, I don't know. But I think it's a place of healing. I think it's a place where we evolve. I think it's an absolutely wonderful place. I did have a near-death experience, about 15 years ago. And I saw my family. I saw friends that had passed over. I saw the most beautiful terrain, very green, very beautiful, a lot of water, a lot of rivers.
And your family and friends, were they sitting around a table, or they just came by, or you saw them doing things? I assume you went through a tunnel and a light?
I did go through a tunnel, and there was a white light. I ended up, after the tunnel, I ended up in, looked to me like a park, and had the most beautiful bench, golden bench. And as I approached this bench, so also did my friends and family from the other side. The interesting thing is I'm a hypnotherapist as well, and a lot of times doing past life regressions, people go to that same bench, describe that same bench.
That is interesting.
It is, yeah.
Years ago I used to do stand-up comedy, and my comedy partner had a near-death experience, and basically, what you're saying is more or less what he said. I'm not sure about the bench, but why do people go and come back, and some people stay? In other words, some people die, some people don't.
You know, I think before we come here, there are certain exit points that we can prearrange.
Interesting.
And I think that we decide in a split moment whether we stay or whether we go. I completely wanted to stay. I loved where I was. However, I felt this nudging to come back into my body that I hadn't done all I was here to do yet. So begrudgingly, I came back.
Now, did you become more spiritual, more religious after this near-death experience?
That's when I started doing readings again.
Okay.
Yep.
It was a life-altering experience.
Very much so. And I said, okay, I give, I'll do it.
Now, what's in your future? I mean, you're going to continue doing basically the same thing? Or do you have some place you want to go?
Well, I think until the day I die, I'll probably be doing readings.
Okay.
You know, I love the private readings. I love giving workshops. I love interacting with an audience. There's wonderful energy there, synergistic energy where everyone feels wonderful after. I love doing the cruises. I love doing John Edward type venues.
Yeah, I understand that, and I guess everyone is infatuated with the ability that Gail has, you have, I guess Jim has it, communicating with the other side.
Yes, I think it's profoundly a humbling experience.
I mean, it seems to me that that is one of the, it's kind of like the gorilla or the elephant in the room. Nobody wants to talk about it, but death is pretty obvious from an early age. You don't really realize it at first. I watch animals, for instance, pets, dogs, when they pass a scene of death, they don't really know how to deal with that.
Right.
And, we take these things into our human psyche, and that obviously is the reason there's so many religions and so many spiritual beliefs, is nobody wants to die.
You know, I think it's the fear of death. I think some people would be okay with dying. They just don't want to hurt while they're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's one thing. Another thing, yes, people have a fear of, is there really life after?
And it's, I'm not trying to get you into any kind of religious discussion here or psychological discussion, but it just seems to me that this is one of the overpowering reasons why, when someone like you says, hey, I can communicate with the other side, everybody's ears perk up. Because everybody wonders.
Everybody does wonder. Everybody.
I mean, whether they want to say they're not. I mean, I've had a nice full life, and I literally tell some of my nemesis in investigating reporting, I don't care. I've had a good life. Threaten me if you want. But deep down, you know, nobody wants to give it up.
Nobody does. You know, and here's the deal, Jerry. I think no one really, really knows until we pass over what the other side is. We all can have our opinions and our ideas of what it looks like. I know what truth resonates for me.
Yeah, and well, you know, we're going to wrap this up, but that leads to the final question. I mean, people have strong beliefs about what's on the other side, and they get over there. Maybe it's not that way. Has anybody ever communicated to you and said, hey, this is different than I thought?
Not at all.
Okay. So they kind of accept whatever it is.
Yes.
Interesting. Hey, I've enjoyed it. And we will look forward to the new book. And what have you got a title for that one yet?
Phantom Debt versus Karma.
And the first book, which is now available, is?
Coffee, Donuts, and God. You can find that on my web at www.vickywarren.com.
Thank you very much, Vicki.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll have Jim Sutterfield next, folks, as we explore the other side.
Hello, this is Steve Motley. You know, buffets are very popular these days, so I've decided to create a cyber buffet containing many life-changing products that I would love for you to take a close look at and try. Here on my site, you'll find the very best of the best in all-natural nutritional products that work. Look closely on my site, and you'll also discover some other very interesting products and services, things like video email. And how about a music download service that pays you to share your favorite music with your friends? Do you own a cell phone? Well, you need a AA battery turbocharger. Hey, know anybody that would like to save big money at the gas pump? Well, we have a product to address that concern as well. Okay, if I've piqued your interest at all, here's what I'd like you to do. About halfway down on the left column of this website, you'll see a graphic that says, Steve Motley's Click Here for Health. I promise you, it'll be the very best click-through you've ever done.
Continuing now with the Psychic Detective Show, we have Jim Sutterfield on the line from Arkansas. How are you, Jim?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Jerry?
Pretty good. Let's talk a little bit about how you got involved in being a psychic detective. I mean, that's not on everybody's wish list, I don't think.
No, it's not exactly what I wanted to be when I grew up. I've been a medium my entire life. And I was working as a medium up around the Chicago area for several years before moving back home to Arkansas. And when I moved back here is when I got contacted by Gail St. John. And I had worked on some criminal cases before up in the Chicago area, around Michigan, a couple around St. Louis. I never really knew exactly how they turned out because I was working with the families instead of police. But when Gail contacted me, she told me about the USPD, United States Psychic Detectives, and what her goal was for the team. And I liked it. So the first case we were working on was, of course, the case of the Gehring children. And that turned out to be a real good case for us because we were able to pinpoint their location within a month. And
you know, when you talk about this, as the listeners already know from our visit with Gail and Vicki, you guys are all in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
But I guess that's really distance. Is that important in psychic ability or not?
No, actually it's not. I've sat for people before I joined the USPD. I've sat for people all over the world, from New Zealand, Germany, Japan. It didn't matter. Matter of fact, one of the cases we're working on right now is in Nepal.
That's pretty far away. What's that about?
There's a woman that came up missing while hiking, and her sister contacted us. She came up missing in October, and they found some of her items on the trail, but the police don't have any leads. They don't have any clues. They really don't. They don't know where to start looking for her. So she contacted us
Is that a different language there?
She speaks English.
Okay.
So it helps.
Yeah.
Because I definitely don't speak any other languages.
You actually have cases around the world.
Yes, we do. There's three we're working on in Japan.
In fact, are you thinking about going over to Japan for a little while? I know Gail might.
It depends on what they want to do. Right now, they're talking about bringing Gail over there, and that would be fine. However they feel like working it.
In Japan, the police authorities, I think, are pretty receptive to this, aren't they?
I think so. I don't see, they look at psychic ability quite a bit differently than, say, the American public does, or the general public in America does. And they don't have psychics or psychic detectives like we do over here. And their own culture makes them more open to it. So what we found is that they're extremely receptive. I mean, they were a bit skeptical right off the bat, but when we were able to give them details about the cases that they had us working on that the police had not released to the public, then they got real excited.
You know, you talked about the difference in cultures. You intimated, I think, when we started the interview, that you found out you had this psychic ability early on in your life. Is that true?
Yes.
And how did that manifest itself? How did you suddenly realize, hey, I have this?
Well, I didn't think that anything was wrong with me. As far back as I can remember, I could talk to people. You know, they'd come into my room at night, whatever. Well, my parents found me walking through the house, talking to people they couldn't see. And
So while you were very young, you had visitors in your rooms.
3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my family, being a very religious family, They freaked. They freaked out. So they were not very receptive to it. I mean, I grew up in Texas. I lived in the South just about my whole life. And being psychic in the South is not a very popular thing to be.
Now, what is your feeling about your religion and psychic ability?
I'm glad you asked that, because that's been a passion of mine my entire life. Because of growing up in a religious family and because of being an outcast, you know, and not knowing, then it set me off on a quest to find as much information as possible. So I've studied just about every religion there is, theology, philosophy, the whole nine yards. And what I have found is that it's hard for me to understand why psychics are looked at the way they are when it's in every religion.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'll just give an example, because this is something that when I came across it, just floored me. We'll just take the Christian religion. There's one passage in the Bible that refers to the greater gifts of spirit, you know, teaching, speaking in tongues.
Mm-hmm.
Going down the list, it says the discernment of spirits.
Now, your family, did they come to accept you with this ability, or?
No.
never have, huh? This is probably one of the things, major problems that psychics run across, I think, is this cultural thing, especially here in the United States, I hesitate to phrase it any other way, but the predominance of fundamentalism.
Yes. That's one of the big hindrances to it. And we're a nation of skeptics.
Now when we talk about your ability... as a psychic, what are we talking about exactly? I mean, can you tell what I'm thinking?
No.
Okay.
I'm not. I don't have telepathy. I can't tell what a person's thinking. I can't get into their head. Usually, I mean, I can tell their emotions, and that's about it.
Sure, that's kind of like most of us if we're attentive.
Exactly. Everyone can do what we do to some degree or another. It's a very natural thing. The only difference is that with me, my own particular gifts are like remote viewing, the ability to see a different place that I haven't ever been before. I'm able to, what really helps with the USPD is I'm able to see crime scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see what happens, I can get descriptions of people, you know, and I can tell what happened where in the house. And so that helps a lot.
So you're able to see distant places you've never been, like this case in Nepal. You may have been able to see the landscape there. I don't know.
Yes. And I'll just give an example of how that case has gone. Is whenever I was focused on it, I would see a hillside, and the more I focused on it, the clearer the image gets. And I could see that it was steep. I could see if there were some trees on it. And then if I went up to the top of the hill, I could tell where the trail was at, you know, and where she was located. And I could pan around like that and get a pretty good lock on that area. And then once I did that, the image shifts to something else. And then I do the same thing there. And the whole time I'm doing that, I'm taking notes down so that I can compare it.
So you literally are sitting at a desk or something, writing down what your vision is?
Yes.
And when you come back and read your notes, does that refresh that vision? I guess it does.
It'll bring it back to my mind. But the main thing that it does, and this is kind of unique about the way that Gail and Vicki and I work, is we'll all three do the same thing without talking to one another. And then we'll take our notes and we'll compare them.
How do they usually compare?
They usually compare really, really close. I mean, even for someone, I've been doing this my whole life, and it just amazed me how pinpoint accurate we were to one another.
I was talking to a friend of mine down in Houston today, a childhood buddy I grew up in high school with, and we were talking about psychic ability. And basically, he and I agreed that we don't really understand what's happening. Do you?
The best I can explain it, and being a medium, I guess it kind of biases me, because the main thing that I do is I speak to those that have crossed over. You know, I talk to dead people.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in a minute, because that's been a large part of the subject here for the show.
Okay. And so basically any information that I get, I credit to them, to the ones coming through to me. They show me things that I can understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that much different than, and that's the way I've explained it in several seminars, say you pull out of your driveway one morning, and every morning of your life you turn right to go to work. And this one particular morning, something is just screaming at you to turn left. You turn left and you find out there's a horrible accident, you've been in the middle of it. You know, that's the kind of thing that happens to everybody, and they generally will pass it off. Well, they never stop to ask, well, who was that screaming at me? Who was that screaming at me? Why were they screaming at me, you know? Why me? And that's the kind of things that I've sat back over my life and I've asked.
And what kind of answers have you gotten?
Well, that's when they'll tell me who they are, where they're from, who they're connected to, how they passed, and they'll give me a little different details about their life.
So literally, maybe even when you were a young boy, as we talked about earlier in the interview, and you were talking to people in your room and around the house, and your parents and the others couldn't see them, you may have been communicating with the dead even then.
Oh, I'm sure I was. Because a lot of the stuff that happened back then I can remember. And a couple of the, one woman in particular that used to come to me all the time, she came to me all the way up. I think the last time that she actually came to me was about 3 years ago.
You're talking about a woman who has passed away.
Yes.
Is on the other side, and she comes back to you frequently. And what happens when she does?
It's usually at a point where, for myself, I'm needing to make a decision, or I'm needing to go in a particular direction.
So, in other words, she's probably somewhat like a guardian angel.
Yeah, or a guide.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't make her decisions for us, but they can nudge us pretty hard in the right direction.
What's your connection with this woman, you think?
On that, I have no idea. That's something that's puzzled me my entire life, and I cannot even count the number of hours I've spent.
And she's given you no indication?
No. And what I've had to accept is that information is probably information that I'm not supposed to have for whatever reason.
When she communicates with you and others from the other side do this, do you hear a voice, or it's a thought pattern, or what?
It depends. A lot of it depends on the person. One thing I like to say is that when a person crosses over, their personality plus, because their personality is the strongest part of them. Okay? So if they're a very loud person, if they're a very strong-willed person, I'm able to see them walk in the room and hear them talking and everything else, and that's happened before. Other times, they're very soft-spoken, and they'll actually speak through my guides to me. And when that happens, that's when I get symbols that I'm familiar with, kind of like a mental shorthand. And I say, okay, I'm seeing this, and this is what it means to me. You know, you understand that.
And when we talk about We're talking about victims of murders more than anything else, I guess. Sometimes maybe accidents and they can't find the body. What is this important to the deceased person, you think, to have closure?
Yes, I think it is. And that, I think that's one of the things that's really amazing about the Gehring case. I've said this several times, is that I don't believe that the credit necessarily goes to USPD. I don't think the credit necessarily goes to the searchers. I think it goes to all of them, but more than anything, I think it goes to those children. Because those children were strong-willed enough, they wanted to be found. So they came through to us. We were able to pinpoint a location. That information got to the searchers. The searchers went out there. And then even when they went out there, the dog broke away from the searcher and ran over to where they were. So to me, that's just saying, you know, they were extremely involved in it.
Now, you mentioned dogs, animals. Do you think they have this sensory perception of spirits, or can you tell?
Oh, I have no doubt of it. I can't count the number of times that I'll be talking about, well, your dog will see them. You know, that's a good way to know when they're around, because the dog will stand there and he'll bark at someone you can't see.
Hmm.
You know, or, you know, a cat will be laying in the middle of the room and all of a sudden they jump up and they run flat into a wall, you know, full speed. It's because they get spooked. So I'm convinced, you know, through all my research and everything, that they definitely can tell.
Can you tell me, or have you concluded, what's happening on the other side? Is it various scenes, or is it one of tranquility, or what?
It's various things. And what I like to say is that we all create our own heaven or hell, in that if my idea of heaven is sitting on a riverbank with a fishing pole, then that might be where I'm at when I cross over. I've had people come across to me, and the image they show me is them sitting on their front porch swing with a glass of iced tea. You know, it's a very peaceful feeling. Now, on the other hand, say someone is someone who committed suicide, it's a completely different feeling.
Have you communicated to people that have committed suicide?
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit more about that.
It's easy to tell when a person has committed suicide or is responsible for their own death, because they'll usually be the first ones to come through, and they jump up and down screaming and shouting that this was their doing. That they have to take responsibility for it. Nobody else. So I've come to realize that that is an imperative thing for them. In order for them to make progress, and in order for them to fully cross over or whatever, they have to do that.
Hmm.
Because when you think about it, a person who commits suicide is someone who's thinking about themselves more than anything, you know, regardless of being drug issues or mental issues or whatever. It's a very self-absorbed thing that leads them to it when you get down the brass tacks. So it's not meant to be crude.
The thing that it's come up before in the show in my mind, and I haven't had a chance to express it, Jim, but I'll ask you. It seems to me that perhaps some people on the other side aren't all that peaceful. I mean, maybe they're not happy, or do they come to terms with everything?
And that's a very accurate statement. And it depends on the person. Some people don't have a problem at all with taking responsibility for things in their life, and they move forward, and they're in a very peaceful place very easily. Others flat refuse to take responsibility. They can't face up to things they've done in their lives. And they trap themselves in this little bubble. They're not happy. They're miserable. You know, to me, that's about as close to a hell as there could be.
And have you run across anybody that was unhappy and suddenly came to terms later, or is it you're just destined to be whatever it is?
Well, yes, I have. I've come across several who they hadn't come through for 2 years. And the client would come back to me after 3 years, and boom, the first person that comes through is this person. And all of a sudden, they're taking responsibility, everything's okay, they're with their family, everything's good. So what I've come to realize is that a person who's in that state or in that position on the other side, when they do, they're not trapped there. The only thing that traps them there is their own personality or their own choices. Once they step out of that, and they start making progress, then they get out of that bubble. The only one that puts them there by themselves is them.
certainly does. So basically, you continue to grow on the other side, spiritually, ego-wise, emotionally.
Oh, sure. That's one of the main lessons that I've learned over the years, is that just because we cross over, you know, we are in a different form, that doesn't mean that we're automatically enlightened. You know, there's still work to do. And to be honest, up until I started working professionally as a medium and working with clients, I would be the first one to argue against things like reincarnation. And I didn't believe it at all until it came through in a reading.
Now let's talk a little bit about, is there more than one place over there, for lack of a better term? I mean, is there a heaven and a hell, or is it all just one dimension? Is it something different that we can even, I mean, I have trouble figuring out what's there.
The best way I could explain it is if I explained it on terms that we're familiar with. Where we're at right now, I'm sure that everybody listening, including yourself, knows some people that are just really negative, really down people. And they usually isolate themselves. They're usually off by themselves. They're not around anyone, if you understand what I'm saying. While others are very sociable, they're very outgoing, and they have friends and family around them and everything else. It's not because they're forced to be off by themselves. It's not because they're forced to have family and friends. It's their choices and the way they handle things. And it's the same thing over there. It's all the same place. It just depends on what they want to do with it.
Well, what are your feelings about... Well, for instance, reincarnation, is that possible?
Well, it's something that, like I said, I argued against vehemently for years and years and years. And then one day I was sitting with a client, and I always record my sessions and then give the tape to them so they can go back over it later. And I was talking to them, and I was talking about a young man that had passed, and he was years ago, and I was just rattling off the information. And all of a sudden, I said, and by the way, the boy has come back. And I stopped. And I stopped the tape, and I rewound it, and I played it back so I could hear myself actually say that. And first thought in my mind was, okay, whoa. I couldn't have just said, that's not me. So now I need to really re-look at things. So once I started re-looking at it, then now I firmly believe in it. I've seen too much evidence for it.
Does everyone come back?
I believe it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that everyone comes back when they choose to, how they choose to, depending on what they're needing to learn or whatever. The goal, of course, is to get close to God or whichever God or higher power you choose to relate to, is to get to that level. So a good way that I look at it is it's kind of like school.
This place you're talking about is different than many people imagine what heaven or hell would be like. How about somebody that has a strong religious ethic, or could even be, it doesn't have to be Christian religion even. They get on the other side. Have you ever heard anybody say, well, I was surprised, I was shocked, or, I mean, do people have trouble adjusting? I mean, it seems to me if you were a devout person in whatever ideology you had, and you get over there, and it's not quite that way, seems like you might have a little problem.
I've had so many of them come through that were devoutly religious. And they were expecting St. Peter and the pearly gates, and they had it all figured out in their head. They come through, and they're like, wait a second, this was not what I expected. But it's better. You know, it took a little bit of adjustment. They were surprised when they got there. They were surprised that, you know, wasn't the St. Peter standing there. There weren't pearly gates, and there weren't a bunch of cherubs going around playing harps, you know, floating around on clouds. Instead, they find themselves, you know, out in the countryside, sitting on the porch drinking a glass of tea or whatever. So it is a little bit of acceptance period in there. And I think that's where other family members who have gone on before us really come in to play on that. They're very instrumental in helping us to adjust.
So in other words, you're convinced that once we pass away, our relatives and friends are there to help you.
Oh, yeah, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
How about somebody's had a pretty combative life and they have enemies?
Well, I can give an example on that. There was a person that I knew that I really could not stand him in life. And after he passed away, it was probably about 3 or 4 months before he came through to me. And he wouldn't come through to me himself, but my dad came through. And he brought this other person through with him. But I told him, no, I don't want this. And he said, son, you're going to sit down, you're going to listen to me. And so he said, look, he's come to terms with things, he's taking responsibility. You need to at least listen and pass on the information to his family. So grudgingly, I said, okay, I'll do that. And it turns out that once he did start taking responsibility, then he was around his family, and they were able to help him more and more. The more responsibility he took, the more he tried to progress, the more help he got.
Let's talk a little bit more about the psychic detective. I appreciate you taking time to talk about the overall philosophy and and feelings and experience that you have. But I imagine this psychic detective work, when it works, and what, I guess before we go any further, what is the success rate? Or have you ever tried to keep score?
I've never really tried to keep score. Our team, USPD, has only been together since October. And the first worked on just right out of the bat was the Garing case, and boom, within a month, we had it nailed. On other cases that I've worked on, my success rate was really, really good. And I've heard the same thing about Vicki, and I've actually seen Gail on Psychic Witness and Psychic Detective.
How do you deal with it when you're wrong? I mean, is there an explanation of why sometimes?
The explanation of why I'm wrong is all wrapped up in the one word, I, because it's a mistake that I made.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I got bad information. It's not that they told me wrong. It's that I took it and misunderstood it, or I misinterpreted it. And that's why I need to step back. I need to go over my notes again and say, okay, where did I make a mistake? Where did I jump here?
Yeah, I from my conversation with Gail and Vicki Bolp, I got the impression that not everyone is really, communicative. A lot of them deal in clues and hints.
Yeah, they can be very close-mouthed about it. And that's where we just had to find different ways to go about getting information. If the murder victim or the accident victim isn't the one wanting to come through, then usually for myself, I'll call the family, and I'll talk to them, and I'll see who else comes through, and I'll try to get the information from them.
Well, you mean like another relative or somebody?
Because some of them don't care if they're found. To them it's not important. It's not as important for them to be found as it is for the family to know they're okay.
Most of these murder victims, do they want retribution, or is it past that? In other words, if somebody killed me and I had the ability to come back to haunt them, I think I'd do it.
That has happened before. That has come through on cases I worked before the USPD. And one of the things, I gave them details about the case, and then I said, okay, now you need to sit back and just watch. You don't do anything. They're taking care of it themselves. Now you need to sit back, watch everything that happens, and more or less just be a witness to it. See what they can do. And the last case that I worked on before I left the Chicago area was a family in Michigan. And they called me to let me know that because of the information that I'd given them, the person that had killed their brother was being arraigned that week. So some of them, I don't know if they want retribution as much as justice.
Well, that was my question. Is there justice on the other side as well?
Oh, yes. You either pay here or you pay there. You don't get away with it.
We only have a couple of minutes left. I notice you do some speaking and seminars and things. I imagine since you started this psychic detective work, maybe you don't have as much time. You have a website, which we have a link to. What do you like to do?
I like to teach. That is my favorite thing to do. I like to be able to open a person's mind up a little bit, show them, prove to them that this is real, and then show them they can do it. Because once that happens, once a person catches on to that, it's like a light bulb comes on behind their eyes and the whole world changes colors for them. And they're a completely different person after that.
So in other words, as we wrap up our program on psychic detectives, if I read you correctly, Jim, you're saying all of us have this ability if we just pay attention.
All of us do, to one degree or another. That doesn't mean that you're going to see your great-grandmother walk through the door, and sit down and play a game of bridge with her or gin rummy or whatever it is. But it does mean that you'll be able to recognize the guidance when it happens.
Jim, we'll be checking back with you. We wish you much success. It's been a very interesting program.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm glad you took the time for us.
Thank you very much. Don't forget the Psychic Detectives. You can see it every Wednesday night on Court TV at 10 o'clock Eastern. This program was produced by Jane Squirtley. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening, and cheers.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.